Hi, everyone. Welcome into a late week edition of Scrambled Eggs, your unofficial Marquette basketball podcast here on Crack Sidewalks. Joe McCann, Phil Bush here with you. We're just doing a little later this week because Marquette did not have a game during the week, so we have a lot to break down. But Phil, I don't know about you, I'm still a little down about the Creighton loss because that was a little tough one to stomach.
Yeah, that was a game they should have won. They chose not to win, and as a result, we are now definitely out of the NCAA tournament and just hoping to make the NIT tournament.
Yeah, I think we had realistically given up on that a while back. But we're going to talk about that in the show. And since we don't think it makes sense to record two podcasts in 4 days, we're going to break down the next three games. Because what sense does it make, Phil, to spend an entire podcast about DePaul?
Oh, God, as little time about DePaul as possible.
But we're going to take a look.
Let's sum it up. Don't lose to DePaul.
That will be the theme of the show, actually. But we're going to talk about the next three games, talk a little recruiting at the end of the show. As well. But, you know, Phil, you know, as I said, we had realistically given up on the tournament a few games ago. I mean, for me, I felt the season died when Marquette lost to DePaul the first time. Then after beating Butler, I thought, okay, maybe if they finish super, super strong, we could be interesting. But then they lose back-to-back games, and then you get to the point where, all right, it's not realistic for this team to win every game the rest of the season. But what was really most disappointing to me about the Creighton loss is it is a big blow to one of the goals I talked about in the last podcast, and that is finishing sixth in the conference. Because if Marquette wants to make the tournament, the most important thing is to win the Big East tournament, because that is really the only way it's going to happen. And winning three games in 3 days is a little easier than winning four in 4 days. And so from that regard, losing to Creighton was a big blow if they want to try to finish sixth.
Well, not only that, not only is it the bye with finishing sixth, but now they are squarely in the Villanova bracket side of things. Which is not a place you generally want to be if you want to make a deep run in the tournament. And it was just, I think the other part of it that was frustrating was every time you feel like they're turning a corner with a game and all right, we're putting the freshman mistakes behind us, we're figuring it out, we're letting our talent drive, then they kind of put out a clunker. I mean, Creighton played particularly bad for them, all things considered equal, and Marquette just couldn't capitalize on it.
Yeah, it wasn't so much that the shooting was awful or that the turnovers were absurdly high. It seemed like, you know, offensive rebounding, if you look at the four factors, Anonymous Eagle broke that down pretty well earlier this week. The rebounding was pretty bad. Because Creighton got the second chance. And bottom line is, Creighton just made some big shots when they had to towards the end, and Marquette was unable to make the big shots down the end.
Yeah, they didn't make the. I mean, nothing about the game for Marquette was good. But then again, it wasn't great for Creighton either. I mean, Creighton went 7-25 from three. Marquette went 5-18. So very similar percentages. You know, from the field, from 2-point range, Marquette was 53%. Creighton was 51%. So on balance, I mean, they both played kind of questionable. And I think more than anything was Marquette seemed to get control in the second half, start to put pieces together, got consecutive stops. But then in the last 5 minutes, apparently decided to miss some layups, kind of let a point guard Watson blow by them on defense for a couple of critical drives. And then just decided, let's not run a play in the last minute. So it was just a bizarre kind of – the team went numb in the brain for some reason.
Yeah, and that was something you know, you had brought up before the show that you wanted to talk about in the show today, Phil, was some of like Wojo's comments after the game about that last possession, that he apparently had a play drawn up. If we're understanding his quote correctly, he had a play drawn up, but the team just didn't run it.
Yeah.
So is that what he said?
Yeah. So he, in his post game conference, which I'll link to in the actual posting for this podcast, so people can listen to it. But he basically said, "Hey, I called a timeout," which I'd like to talk about. That was a silly coaching decision. Marquette had the momentum at that point. Just let him play. So Wojo took kind of a bad timeout, let Creighton recover. Creighton was in zone going into the timeout, and Wojo said he drew up a play. They came out of the timeout. Creighton had switched to man, whether that's relevant to what happened or not, unknown. But Wojo just said, hey, they didn't even attempt to run the play I drew up out of the timeout. And for A, for him to admit that, and B, for that to happen, like, what, we just went street ball? Like, why did we not run the play? What precipitated that? You know, is that bad coaching on Wojo's part? What happened?
Yeah, the thing is, for some teams, I think there would be players out there who would have, you know, the right to audible, to use a football term, you know, to, like, look at the defense and say, look, we're going to do something else. Like, I would say Chris Dunn would have those privileges at Providence, you know, or Tyler Ulis would have those privileges at Kentucky. But I'm not sure there's a guy at Marquette that you would say, all right, he can run the offense without the coach. You know, it's not like there's a Travis Diener out there for this team. So if that's what happened, that some player out there on the floor just went out there and said, you know, we're going to do something else, that's concerning. It's also concerning if they just get out there and just got scared and just panicked and just did whatever. Like, so I'm not sure exactly what happened at the end there, but it does make me wonder, you know, what direction this team is going here with five games to go.
Well, right. And it, you know, it's like, what amongst the season has this team looked at and said, you know what, we've got this. We know what we can do in this situation. And even if that was what the thinking was, oh man, the coach is wrong, they've gone man, we're going to just do whatever. How does that result in a very poor shot selection of a deep two or a short three from Ellenson when you're up a point and about 40 seconds left on the shot clock? It just doesn't make any sense. Like, what out of the Providence game where we just made silly mistake after silly mistake for the win, did we think that we could ad lib at the Creighton game?
Yeah, that Providence game.
Oh, man, God.
I mean, they won. I mean, that was great.
Yeah.
But, you know, not without some comedic freshman moments there at the end. Of course, the one that's going to stick out from that one was, you know, right at the very end when Cohen, you know, was driving at the basket. And, you know, in that situation, like, he had a wide open lane. And I guess in that situation, I'm okay with a dunk. But he got caught in between dunk and layup and just totally butchered the whole thing.
And that's like his third blown, like, layup gimme.
Yeah.
I think it's mental now.
Yeah, it is got to be in his head. I mean, somebody's just got to sit Sandy down and shake him a little bit and say, look, you're 6'6", you can dunk, throw it down. Like, when you're that close, just throw it down. And don't, you know, you're not going to break the rim or anything. Just dunk it. But the thing is, I can understand taking the shot. I can't understand missing it. But then a total panic move by Hanif Cheatham. And I bet Cheatham has probably watched the game film and probably himself said, who is that guy? I can't believe I did that. But again, it just maybe it speaks to inexperience, just a total panic move that he came down with the rebound and decided to go right back up with it, where Ollie, if he just held it, he would have been fouled and been going to the free throw line. Instead, he missed it, and then Providence got, you know, they tied it and we went to another overtime. Thankfully, Marquette won the game, but just a moment like that, you're like, oh my gosh, who are we sending out there?
Well, and that was probably the third different time we tried to lose that game.
Ellenson had the foul on the three.
Yeah, and Tracy Carter had the drive where we apparently decided that fouls were not a thing we called anymore, which is kind of the direct one. Just one other side note on that Providence game. When was the last time, you know, I'm not one to harp on officiating necessarily, but when was the last time we felt like we got even a little bit of home cooking? Because that Ellenson foul was pretty questionable. I mean, it certainly looked like the shot was well gone and Ellenson was boxing out up for the rebound when they called the foul. And yeah, Tracy Carter clearly was armbarred on the drive to the hoop. And then even worse, the ball was thrown out of bounds because Tracy Carter's elbow was nearly dislocated.
Yeah, I think it's been well documented by many that officiating is just atrocious across college basketball. You know, of course, we're in our little world here in the Big East, and we get tired of Big East officiating, but I think everyone feels they are slighted by officials at some point or the other. But I think from the Marquette perspective, yeah, there are so many that just get you so frustrated because they take you out of the rhythm of the game, especially if it's something cheap on Fisher or Ellenson that gets them out of the game, because Marquette really takes a step backwards when one or both of those guys are off the floor. So, yeah, I definitely can't remember a time where I thought, whew, officials gave us that one.
Yeah. Well, and to bring it back to the Creighton game, I mean, it's one of those things where, or the season in general, where they're on a razor thin margin, right? I mean, where it's one little thing tipping you one way or the other can either result in, you know, just a frustrating loss or a seat of your pants win. And you know, the Creighton game was an example of that, where it took for them to lose that game. It took probably three or four mistakes that just shouldn't happen at this point in the season, or, you know, maybe one bad call, which, okay, you're going to get a bad call, but the margin is so thin for Marquette, you just can't afford to have any bad officiating.
Yeah. And that, I guess maybe that's part of a young team too, is maybe they get rattled and too frustrated with the officiating, and then maybe they don't execute late in the game. But I think, like I said, I think the big thing is just times when Fisher's out of the game, if he's got cheap fouls and he can't be out there. Because you see, Marquette, what a different team Marquette is when Fisher's out of the game and Ellington has to play center. And, you know, you have, you know, when the turnovers are up, when you have all those guards on the floor. Because as we've talked about the floor, the turnovers are high for everyone. But when you have Dwayne Wilson and Cheatham and Carter, odds are some of those guys are going to turn it over. And when the team gets sped up a little bit, I think the turnovers are a little higher. And in Ellington, when he's in the post, you know, his turnovers are probably a little higher as well. So,
well, and yeah. One thing we should say about the turnovers, like in the Creighton game, they were, I mean, 13's not like the greatest thing ever, but I mean, that's an acceptable level of turnovers. So they,
yeah, that's by Marquette standards, that was like, all right, not an awful game with the turnovers.
Right. But. And the same with the Providence game. I mean, they only had, I think, six turnovers in the last 30 minutes of that game. So they're maybe starting to get the turnovers under control, but it's like, okay, we've got this issue contained, but we've sprung a leak on this other part of the boat of the bad decision boat.
Yeah, it was just a rare game where Marquette did not turn over their opponent very often in that Creighton game. Creighton only had eight turnovers. So Creighton actually did a pretty decent job protecting the ball. The only guy who turned it over a bunch was Watson, and he just had the ball in his hand a lot. So, I mean, he had 10 assists, too, and he had 18 points. But, yeah, that, I guess that was, you know, part of the reason. It was just a three-point margin. And, you know, as KenPom had it predicted, it was pretty much a pick'em game, and it just went Creighton's way. They just made a couple more plays in the end. So,
well, with the, yeah, and I mean, we don't have any scientific data, but do you feel they're making fewer, the same, or more mistakes at this point in the season than they have throughout the rest of the season?
I would say maybe it's a tick lower.
Right, you know, it's
not significant, right? It's not like night and day, like, you know, the difference between the way they played against Iowa and the way they played against LSU. It's not like that kind of a difference, like where there was just a big difference in the discipline of the offense. I think as far as freshman mistakes and inexperience and, you know, chemistry, marginal improvement. You know, I think it's too little, too late for this season. I think if they were playing like this in December, I would be optimistic that they could put it all together by the end. But I think they've maybe started to make progress a little too late for this year.
Well, and we've been kind of hanging on our hopes on, you know, especially since, like, say, the DePaul game, that, okay, we're playing this out, we're getting experience, next year is the year. Do we think we've seen enough development? And this goes back to the, you know, somewhat poor coaching decisions in game and player development. Have we seen enough growth and improvement out of this team that we think that can continue forward into next season, where next season everyone's a year older and we're generally everyone's kind of going, next season is got to be a good season. Like, do we think there's enough development going on to justify that belief?
I got to see the roster first, you know, and like a big part, obviously, is Ellington. You're assuming, I'm assuming Ellington.
I'm 100% assuming that.
And so if he's gone, then the offensive rebounding struggles are not improving. So I want to see maybe who is added to the roster, whether it's a grad transfer or maybe a freshman who is, you know, Big East ready, which is hard to find, especially this late in the recruiting process. So while I'm cautiously optimistic that the guards will be better, I'm also optimistic that Rousey will add some stability at the point guard spot, and maybe the turnovers will be better, and maybe the ball will be distributed a little better.
And the shooting should be better.
Shooting should be better. But I think, man, we are going to miss. I mean, this is an obvious statement. It's like, duh, but we're going to miss Ellington so much next year. You know, I mean, a guy who rebounds at an NBA level, you take him off of a team that doesn't rebound very much. I think you're putting a lot on Fisher, and you're probably putting a lot on Helt, and you're not going to play them together. But I think in that regard, it's good that Helt is getting the little bit of playing time he is this year, because, I mean, he's going to get a lot of time next year, because whenever Fisher's in foul trouble, he's going to play some extended minutes. And I think it's not that it's going to be necessarily 50-50 between the two of them. I think Fisher will still play as much as possible, but I think Helt will get minutes. And, you know, maybe Wojo would experiment with them together, but I would think that would be rare. I don't think Helt would compliment Fisher the way
that I think they're two the same player.
Yeah, I don't think I'm not sure Fisher could or Helt could, you know, guard the four, you know, or you know, things like that. So I would doubt they play together. But, well, you know, that's something for next year. But to answer your question, I'm cautiously optimistic about the guards, but the size is a big concern for me for next year. So I think, like you said earlier, while we plug one hole, another one opens up. So even though we theoretically are only losing one key contributor, it is a major, major contributor. And so for that reason, I can't be super, super optimistic that Marquette breaks through next season, but we'll kind of see what the roster looks like.
Right. Yeah, we just got to hope that the players themselves continue to learn and the coaching staff continues to learn, because it is very clear that this is a coaching staff, while probably quite talented, are almost if not more inexperienced than the players they have in terms of the roles the staff is in. And there's some curious decisions that get made from time to time that I'm hoping will get resolved with experience and you know, having the power to make the call. And like you said, I'd be curious to be, you know, like you said pre-podcast, I'd be curious to be the fly in the wall, because if a team came out of a timeout and just decided to not run a play that Tom Izzo had called,
yeah,
could you imagine the carnage?
Blood would be shed.
Yeah, it would not be good. And so,
Bill Self would sit that kid for two games. You know, like, I mean, Coach K, Roy Williams, you know, if they call a play, you better freaking run it.
Right. You know, and so I'm curious to see how we, you know, especially since Wojo went and essentially put them on blast, you know, you know, to come out in a press conference and say, well, you know, it was a tough loss. That's on us. But, you know, I'll take responsibility. But, yeah, the team just didn't do anything I told them to do.
I take responsibility, but, man, they screwed me hard.
Yeah.
No, he didn't. Boy. He didn't say that, obviously. But, you know, but it is kind of an interesting – it's a weird spot for Wojo, because he doesn't want to throw his players under the bus, but he has to explain what happened too.
Right, right. And you know, so what will be interesting to see, you know, we've had a week off now to stew about this, and a run, I would assume, are an extensive number of sprints as a consequence. And now they got to go down to DePaul and you know, not turn that into a house of horrors, it seems to be.
Yeah. By the way, how many of you out there have gotten calls from DePaul asking if you would like to attend the game?
Me. And DePaul not even mentioning their DePaul, just asking if you want to be if you want to see Marquette play in Chicago.
I've seen several alumni that I follow on Twitter who live either in Milwaukee or Chicago say they've gotten calls from the DePaul athletic department trying to sell them some tickets. So maybe we have a nice Marquette crowd there. As we know, Chicago is probably the biggest alumni base outside of the state of Wisconsin for Marquette. So who knows? Maybe we'll see a lot of Marquette fans there, and maybe it won't be so scary. But as I've said before, I think you could put a Marquette team with, you know, Dwayne Wade, Jay Crowder, Jimmy Butler,
Steve Novak, Robert Jackson,
Wes Matthews, Jarrell McNeil.
We'll have Dominic George Thompson James coming off the bench.
Yeah, and they would still go down to DePaul and shoot 20%, and it's just the way it goes.
Well, you know what's interesting is Marquette has not lost twice to DePaul in a single season since 1991.
Oh gosh, you don't want that on your resume.
Oh, what kind of that to get swept by DePaul, especially as craptacular as they are this season, does that just wipe out all the goodwill that you've earned in the season?
Yeah. Especially, you know, the emotions of the Marquette fans online are amusing, and I'm as guilty as anyone, but we go from a win over to Providence, hey, we could make the tournament, to a loss to Creighton, oh God, we should fire Wojo. What would happen if it gets swept by DePaul? Bottom line, what I'm saying is, do not lose this freaking game.
No. If Marquette loses to DePaul, I will insist my wife take my phone away from me, because there will be tweets and text messages that I would regret 24 hours later.
Yeah. You know, the bottom line is, yeah, obviously the tournament and all that stuff is gone, but the NIT is still in play, but a loss to DePaul puts that in jeopardy in my mind.
Oh, well, I mean, it really depends on. I mean,
the thing is, the season could just totally just go off the rails after that, and you could lose out.
Sure.
And then you're 16-15,
and not getting happens, in.
And then you could lose in the first round in the Big East tournament, so you're right at 500. So I mean, then you're really in trouble. So please freaking beat DePaul. Because the thing is, if you beat DePaul, you look at the Big East standings, finishing sixth is still not out of the realm of possibility, because it's a big cluster there from 3 to 8. Because obviously Villanova's running away with the thing. Xavier is right there just in case they decide to collapse. And then there's a big line, and you got Seton Hall, Creighton, Providence, Butler, Georgetown, Marquette, all separated by 3 games.
And they've got to all play each other.
Right, and Marquette's a game and a half back of Providence, Butler, and Georgetown. We're recording this on Thursday night.
Yes, and Georgetown is, if possible, imploding, or is certainly blowing up late in the season more than even Marquette has been.
Yeah, so that's the thing. Marquette gets Georgetown at home, so you would hope that's a shot to get a win, move up a little bit. But still, two teams are going to be playing on that first day of the Big East tournament, in addition to DePaul and St. John's. And so which two is it going to be? Right now, I would think there's a good chance it's going to be Marquette, but Marquette can still play their way out of that. But to have any hope of doing that, you've got to freaking beat DePaul.
Yeah. Well, and how many, we've got, what, 5 games left? How many do you think we have to win to get that 6th seed?
Honestly, I think
3.
I think at least 3, and one of them has to be Creighton.
Yes. Yeah, because certainly DePaul. Creighton is definitely, because we're competing with Creighton, and I think Georgetown, because we're also competing with Georgetown. Or Georgetown,
right?
Butler
there too.
One of the two.
Yeah, but you got to be one of them. It almost sounds funny to say, but beating Villanova doesn't help you that much.
Right.
You know, it would be an amazing win, and we could all rush the floor and cheer about it, but as far as the standings in the race for 6th, doesn't help you that much. I'd much rather beat Creighton and Butler than beat Villanova.
Oh, this is weird.
Yeah, it is weird. But I think at least 3 to have a prayer, because all those teams are going to be playing each other, and there should be a lot of shifting in the Big East standings before we get to Madison Square Garden. But yeah, the layup, you know, I shouldn't say layup, but DePaul has to be a layup. You got to win that game. You do that, you got to shake the horrors, shake the ghosts that go with traveling down to Chicago and playing DePaul. So you get past that one, then you got 4 games left. I think if you can get one, I would feel very, very secure about an NIT berth. I think Marquette would be in pretty good shape if they can get 2 more wins this season with DePaul, and then hopefully 1 more. Ideally, Georgetown at home. That seems like a winnable game. And then, you know, if they get a 3rd win here in these last 5 games between Creighton and Butler, I think it would be possible. Again, there's so many things that could happen. It would be possible that they could sneak into 6th in the conference. And then then you roll the dice and take your chances in MSG and see what happens.
Right. Well, you know, the thing that's interesting is, you know, we're pinning our hopes on getting an NIT bid, but what ends up happening, you know, what could get interesting there is you know, there's a lot of top teams that are losing and those types of things. But I think the NIT, they're required to take a regular season conference winner if they don't make the NCAA.
Yes, the NIT bids really start disappearing when those single bid leagues have upsets. So if you're somebody's been tweeting out NIT bracketology lately, and because I love to torture myself, I have been clicking on it and looking at it. So Marquette has been projected as a 6th seed in the NIT. So comfortably in, but not super comfortable.
Right. For those playing at home, there are 8 seeds per bracket, per side of the bracket, right? 32
yes,
teams.
So 32 teams. So bottom line is, from Marquette's perspective, it's almost like being a bubble team for the NCAA. You want the favorites in all those one bid leagues to win. Like, you want one seeds everywhere in all the small leagues to win, because if, you know, those one seeds in those small leagues win, then they don't necessarily get, they don't get any necessarily guarantees to have a team in the NIT. You get your one little team in the NCAA and you go have a blast. But if the top team gets upset, then the consolation prize is they get to play in the NIT. So I think there was like a year or two ago, there was something like 7 or 8 or something like that that just wiped out so many bids in the NIT. Maybe it wasn't that many, but it just seemed like a lot. Like, maybe it was like 5 or something that just, they wiped out so many NIT bids, and the NCAA got crowded because there were so many upsets in tournament. And there's bound to be a couple. I mean, there'll be 2 or 3, but you just got to hope it doesn't get ridiculous and we have like 4, 5, 6 teams swiping bids from the NIT, because then, you know,
Marquette could be on the outside looking in.
Yeah, so you really don't want that to happen.
Right. So what are the next 3 games look like? We've got DePaul on the road. Well, oh, dear
according
God.
To KenPom, basically there are 2 games left where Marquette is a slight favorite and 3 games left where Marquette is supposed to get boat raced. That would be at Creighton, Villanova at home on National Marquette Day, and then at Butler for the season finale. All 3 of those are less than 20% chance to win, while DePaul and Georgetown are slightly above 50%. So, but, you know, ideally, hopefully you get 2 wins out of this. You finish 7-11 in conference, which certainly is an improvement over last year. Maybe a slight disappointment compared to our preseason expectations. But 7 wins, okay.
Well, considering I thought we had a shot to go 12-6.
That was a little crazy.
Yeah.
My 10 wins is not much more sane as we look back at it than I predicted. So, but yeah, I think you just hope the team doesn't get too down about themselves, right? You know, you hope, and we've seen them pick themselves up and get wins before. You know, they seemed like they were down in the dumps after an ugly win over Stetson. They came back and played a great game and beat Butler. They played a pretty good, and then, you know, after they lost to Seton Hall, which was pretty crushing, they played a great game at Xavier, lost, but they played a great game. And then they played about 38 great minutes against Providence and were able to get a win there. So that's a young team, you know. That's kind of what happens with it. They forget easily.
Yeah, well, and that's kind of what the team has been all season, right, is somewhere between 35 to 38 great minutes of good to above average minutes of basketball, and, you know, 2 to 6 minutes of pretty boneheaded, spectacularly bad basketball.
And sometimes slapstick comedy.
Yeah. Was it the Providence game in the first half? There was definitely in the first half where Tracy Carter turned it over, then Ellenson turned it over, then Hanif turned it over, and you kind of went, yeah, that feels about
Yaki
right.
Sacks for that sequence there.
Yeah, that felt about right. And then there was one of the other games, maybe it was Xavier or maybe it was is Creighton. They're all blending together now in a horrible kaleidoscope of pain. Where both teams were going back, blown layups, missed jump shots, and they raced back and forth and I think got like 8 shots hoisted in a minute, and nobody could seem to hold on to the ball or hit anything.
Yeah, you get those moments with this team, and hopefully we don't have to suffer through too many more of them next year. But I think we got to deal with it for the rest of this year. That's just the way it's going to be. So, one thing I am excited about, though, is National Marquette Day. I'm looking forward to checking out the Nova game.
You will be here in person to check it out.
I will be there live and in person, which I'm excited for. It's been an embarrassing long time since the last time I saw a Marquette game in person.
It's changed a little bit. The team's changed in the last 5 or 6 years. I don't know if you had noticed.
It has. Like, no joke, the last time I saw a Marquette game in the Bradley Center, Lazar Hayward was starting.
Oh my God, that is forever.
Yeah.
So well, Chris Otule was just starting his residency.
Yeah, he was just a young buck the last time I was.
He was just a third year of his residency.
Yeah, but hey, I did see them. I was looking through my like timeline on Facebook and like, man, when was the last time I went to a Marquette game? And I guess the last time I actually saw them in person, I feel like I see them a lot because I watch every game on television and I go to watch parties with the alumni here in Dallas. But the last time I saw them in person was in Kansas City when they played in that that CBE Classic when they played. They lost two games. They played Duke and they lost to Gonzaga the next night.
Was that Dominic James' senior year?
No. It was after. It was definitely Devontae Gardner's freshman year. Yeah, so that's – I definitely remember seeing him play, and he was just, like, wowing the crowd with his agility at his size. So
yeah, that's right. I remember that he had one coast-to-coast layup against Duke that kind of cemented his, like, what do we got here?
Yeah, I know. So that was the last time I saw Marquette in person. So I'm excited to see them in person. But a more important visitor for Marquette that day is Marcus Howard, who is a point guard at Findlay Prep in Nevada. We've talked about him a little bit before on the show. Possibly a very important recruit for Marquette. He has not decided if he is going to be a 2017 or 2016 prospect, but he is a very good point guard. He is currently ranked around the top 30-ish for 2017. I'm not sure where he would fit in this year's class, but he is taking a visit, and to my knowledge, it is still on. He recently canceled a visit to Indiana, which is an excellent decision.
Well, nobody wants to go there.
Yeah, who wants to go there? So he is, as far as I know, still taking a visit to Marquette for the Nova game. So I really hope it is a loud crowd, a great environment. I mean, honestly, I know we're all down in the dumps about some of the losses Marquette has had this year. I get that. I'm sad about some of it too. But I hope it is a loud, rowdy crowd for that game. I hope there's a lot of gold in the crowd. I hope we fill it up. It's National Marquette Day. We don't have football. It's basically our homecoming. And hey, how many times does the number one team in the nation come to the Bradley?
Oh, I hope they're still number one.
Yeah, they better not screw this up and lose to Butler on Saturday.
Oh, I would be so angry.
They have Butler at home, so hopefully not. But the thing is, they are at Xavier on Wednesday, but even if they go and lose that game,
they'd still be number one, technically.
They'd still be number one because there wouldn't be a new ranking between Wednesday and Saturday. But still, it would just sour it for me a little bit.
Yeah.
Just a little bit. Well, I am pulling for Villanova like crazy to win their next two games and come into the Bradley Center as number one. And hey, if I'm going to see Marquette in person and see Marquette get roped, I want to see him get roped by the number one team in the country.
Yeah. Well, let's hope we get the more Creighton-like crowd, which was nice for a 7 p.m. night game. It was a pretty good crowd, even though it was pretty cold. But let's hope the Providence group doesn't show up, because that was sad from an attendance perspective. Like, that was the most disappointed I think I've been in about 3 years in attendance at a Marquette game.
Yeah. Like I said, I get people being a little disappointed in the win-loss record, but the kids want your support. And hey, like I said, there is a major prospect who is going to be there for the game. Let's show him what he could potentially be playing in front of.
Right. And just as a side connection, he had originally committed to Arizona State. His lead recruiter at Arizona State was Stan Johnson, who is currently an assistant coach at Marquette.
Yeah, I Stan Johnson's the lead recruiter here, and he's been busting his butt to try to get Marcus Howard to Marquette. You saw him – I saw him – somebody pointed out like a tweet he threw out. He said, hey, did anybody notice he tweeted that from Henderson, Nevada? It's like, so he's out there a lot, and he's working hard to get Howard to Marquette, and I think Howard is genuinely interested. Obviously he is, or he wouldn't be taking an official visit. So I hope that visit goes well, win or lose. Obviously, if they win and – we have a big boisterous crowd and the fans go nuts, then that would be great. But I don't think, it's not like he's going to depend his decision on whether or not Marquette wins that game. But the experience he has, whether he has fun, whether he's treated well, whether the crowd is loud, and I am hopeful that all those things will be positive. And we'll see if, I'm not sure a commitment is even imminent. He may not be committing until next year, but there is still a slight possibility he could join Marquette for next year if he decides to reclassify for 2016. I never understood how that works.
I don't understand how you just get to decide, you know what, I'm going to graduate now instead of next year.
I'm done now.
this high school thing, not for me anymore.
I'm out, but I guess he's taken enough classes, and Findlay Prep is a prep school, so I guess he's taken all the core courses. It's just a matter if he wants to take a few more classes, I guess. I don't know. But, again, he's a guy who could potentially join, and he's a major recruit, so keep an eye on that. By the way, speaking of, it seems like Wojo has been throwing out quite a few offers by his standards lately. We mentioned in the last podcast they threw out an offer to – there was a shooting guard in South Carolina, kind of a low – kind of a bit of a project, but they threw an offer to him. They threw an offer to Bruno Fernando, who is supposedly committing rather soon. So I don't know if Marquette's even still in on him. I guess he's from Montverde Academy, which is where Ben Simmons went. But he's, that's a powerhouse down there in Florida. And I guess Florida State's the favorite there. But It'd be nice if he wants to take a visit to Marquette before the season's over, before he makes his final decision. So that's another big man. And they've offered Khalif Young, who we talked about. I saw a tweet today that they also offered Khalif Young's teammate up there in Canada, Eugene, help me out here, Omer Yui.
Way better than I would have done.
We're going to call him Eugene. And Gene has apparently been offered as well. And I think just kind of like Young, there's not much out there on him because he's a Canadian prospect. So I'm not sure exactly where he ranks. I don't think he's been scouted by too many, you know, scouts here in the United States. But I guess Wojo apparently thinks enough to offer him. So,
well, our last Canadian prospect turned out okay.
Cadugan?
Junior Cadugan.
Yeah. Turned out all right. Turned out he had a great career. He had his own freshman moments into his senior year.
Yes, he did.
But he was a good point guard, man. I'd take a junior.
Well, I just remember at the time everyone kind of being wishy-washy on him, and within at least a year, if not 2 years, people going, oh, dear God, does Junior Cadugan have any?
We miss Junior Cadugan so bad.
Does he have any eligibility left?
But, yeah. Speaking of former players, one more note as we get out of here. Our old pal Steve Novak has been he was traded again on Thursday. This guy has been traded so many freaking times. It was kind of a discussion on Twitter on Thursday. How remarkable that Steve Novak, you know, we love Steve, but how remarkable how long his NBA career has lasted. You know, because if we're breaking him down unbiased, he really only has one high-level skill.
If you can be the best at one thing, you have value, right?
Yeah, and he has been a high-level shooter for a long time, and he has been in the league 10 years now. This is his 10th year in the league, and I guess he's been traded to the Nuggets, which is his 10th team. Apparently, he's never going to play for them, though. It looks like he's going to be bought out, and so maybe there's a playoff team that is interested in adding him to the roster, because if he's going to agree to a buyout, then there's got to be somebody who's going to bring him on board. So Novak may not be done in the NBA, and good for him.
Well, and the record, we did look this up, the record for most teams played for is 12. So he's got a shot at that.
Wow. There are some guys who have just played for, like, a ton of teams. So 12, huh? You got to go for that, man.
Yeah. Well, like we joked about beforehand, what kind of money would you pay to have him on Golden State?
I would love to see it. Just, like, let him play for 5 minutes with the Warriors. You know, I just want to see it. Just let him be out there with Green and with Curry and Thompson, right? And just and Barnes. And just let him play. I just watch him and just get Novak a few open shots. And I think it would be just a joy to watch. For me personally, maybe not for everyone else.
Right, the rest of the NBA would be an abject horror.
What is 20 doing out there?
Who is this guy?
Who is it? But anyway, like I said, everyone loves Steve Novak. He was, you know, a big part of Marquette's history. He was on the Final Four team, and he was part of a big transition, a bit of a transition for Marquette, because after Wade left, there were some kind of rough years there. But then he ushered in. He was the senior when James and McNeil and Matthews all came in, and that was the first year in the Big East. And of course, his 41-point game against UConn was Marquette's first Big East game. So a lot of good memories associated with Steve Novak, of course. And I'm just so impressed with him that he's played in the NBA as long as he had. I broke it down. He's played 10 years. He's made about $20 million in the NBA.
It's not a bad gig if you can get it.
And he hasn't played all that much.
Right. So he's rested. He's not going to have the physical.
Like, he's still got his knees.
Right.
You know, he's in his early 30s now, and dude, that's a heck of a life. Good for him. And I don't know what he's going to be doing after basketball. I don't know how many contracts he has left, you know, because right now he's in the last year of a 4-year deal that he signed after that one huge year he had with the Knicks. Remember that he had that one year where he was like near the top of the league in 3-point percentage. He kind of became a fan favorite. That's when he started doing the discount double check, because that was right around the time the Packers won the Super Bowl, and of course he's a huge Packers fan. So he was doing the belt after he made all those threes, and so he just developed just a huge following in New York. And then they trade him to Toronto, and I was so ticked about it too, because, like, man, he had a following in New York. But before he got traded, he got that 4-year contract worth $15 million. So basically, that was right around the Jeremy Lin-Linsanity thing. So he basically parlayed Linsanity into $15 million, and now that contract's expiring. So I don't know if he'll get another one in the offseason. Like, I don't know if how interested he would be in coming back for the veterans minimum somewhere, and maybe he will. Who knows?
Well, it all depends on what his, you know, prospects are. Who knows? Maybe he's going to go back to Brown Deer and coach high school basketball, or who knows?
Maybe there. To be honest, if he wants to be in the Marquette athletic department in some capacity, I'm sure they could find some room for him.
He would probably be one of my top two or three personal favorites to bring a player back and have them be a major part of the athletic program in some way.
Yeah. So, but who knows? I hope he sticks around for two more years, though, and gets that 13th team. Like, can we count the Nuggets, even though we never played for him, if they're going to release him?
I think that counts because the contract shows up on their books. But I'll check with my guy.
We'll check with legal and get back to you next week. So I guess that's about going to wrap it up for this edition of Scrambled Eggs. One more note. I do want to thank everybody for listening. Phil, we hit a milestone this week. Not significant, but, you know, we've been doing this for 3 years now.
It feels no longer than 6 or 7 years.
Yeah. To give an idea how long we've been doing this podcast, like when we first started, like Marquette was like good.
Yeah. As we joked about on text message, we originally thought the curse of the podcast was news would break immediately following recording it. Now, upon reflection, it may just be that Marquette sucks when we podcast.
Yeah, who knows? If they lose to DePaul this weekend, maybe this is our last podcast.
Right.
Maybe we just enjoy shut the thing down.
Yeah. That actually would probably be one of the tweets I would send out. Never podcasting again.
Yeah, we're done. We're done. But in all seriousness, we do thank you for listening, because if the thing didn't pick up steam and people didn't listen and we don't see thousands of downloads every week, we'd probably definitely stop doing it.
It would just be limited to, you know, us calling each other and talking about it as opposed to recording.
Call each other and talk about basketball anytime. We don't need to make you guys listen to it. But anyway, thanks for listening. So again, we always appreciate it. We appreciate your feedback as well. You can hit us up on Twitter. I'm Joe McCann 3. Phil is MOOF23. Crack Sidewalks is the team handle. You can go to cracksidewalks.com. That's where we post the blogs or post the podcast. Phil had mentioned he's going to put that link to the video when he posts the podcast, if you want to get Wojo's post-game comments to kind of see what we were referencing there. And of course, we have a Facebook page as well, Scrambled Eggs on Facebook. You can like us there. We post them there. And of course, we are on iTunes. Hey, Phil, happy anniversary, buddy. And I'm looking forward to seeing Marquette in person.
Yeah, absolutely. I can't wait to get you in town, and we'll show you a good time.
Find my way to the Bradley Center. You know, I hope I don't get lost.
Well, that's true. But remember, it's also probably going to be the last time in the Bradley Center.
Yeah, there's a pretty good chance that will be my last visit to the Bradley Center, because who knows when I'll get back to Milwaukee and see a game in person. But I am looking forward to it. And, hey, everyone, again, in all seriousness, pack that place for National Marquette Day. And, you know, the number one team in the nation doesn't come to town very often. Pack that place. Fill it with blue and gold. Fill the corners like Al McGuire would have said. And also, as he would have said, seashells and balloons, everyone. We'll see you next time.